Hold your course.
Scouts returned from all parts, assuring the new laird of Palmaris Town that there was no enemy force congregating anywhere near his already battered and wounded city. Milwellis was always looking north along the river, always looking home.
He should come forth.
He referred to the King of Hants, who, by all accounts, was holed up in his walled city, surrounded by tens of thousands of soldiers.
His hesitance is your gain. We are more than halfway to Delaval City from Palmaris Town, and have swept the land and the river clear of Powrys through all of that populated region.
The people sing praise for the King of Hants.
They sing louder for the savior laird of Palmaris Town. For you. And King Yezelnik hears those songs, do not doubt. Your march has been as brilliant as courageous, and all the folk are taking notice. You'll hear few songs to Bonagrand now, and many to Milwellis.
King Yezelnik will come to see me as a rival.
He will come to realize that you are his only hope.
And yet this Bonagrand peasant controls more of his army than I.
Where is Bonagrand? The threat is here, the bloody caps, and Bonagrand has not arrived on the field. King Yezelnik values his own safety above all else, and you, Laird Milwellis, secure that. With every victory you strike, with every Powry force massacred and drowned, Palmaris Town stands taller.
My father was defeated by Yezelnik's enemies.
All the more reason for you to hold to your course and secure the whole of the Mesa Dalaval. You must climb upon your father's broad shoulders and stand taller than he. Your actions now, for Hants, and not just for Palmaris Town, secure your place as the second of Yezelnik. All the coast for Palmaris Town, from our city across the gulf, and down the Mantis Arm all the way to Ethelbert Docental. That was your father's dream, and will be your reality.
We come into lands where Bonagrand shall arrive. Narrow the line nearer to the riverbank, and let us increase our pace. If any Powrys have moved farther inland, let Bonagrand have them. I wish to see Delaval City before the week's end.
Wisely decided.
King Yezelnik will see the flag of Palmaris Town before he spies the banner of the Peasants of Pride. He'll be knowing who it was that kept him safe in his high walls.
Branson felt as if he were sifting through a tangle of roots, as if two willows had joined in battle, their supple appendages whipping and wrapping and twisting until it became impossible to know where one tree ended and the other began. For such was the tangle within poor Brother Giavno's mind. Every now and then, Branson could get a sense as to which branch belonged to which tree, Giavno or Ishat. He knew the man's name to be Ishat. But even then, the challenge for his disembodied spirit remained, for he too was now a willow in the wind, trying to control his own thoughts, trying to keep his own supple mental appendages from grappling with and being entwined with those of Giavno and Ishat. He knew what he wanted to do, though. If he could manage to help Giavno regain a sense of self, a foothold in time and space, and a realization that this was his body and place, perhaps the monk would have a fighting chance of expelling the man from there. Branson had no sense of time in here, for the thoughts piled one above the previous in rapid succession. Most of those moments were spent in mental dodging, pulling away before being caught and held. Every now and then, however, Branson did find a distinctive thread, a piece of consciousness he knew to be Brother Giavno.
Know thy sense of self. Recognize that this is your place.
The surprisingly clear stream of Giavno's consciousness flitted and dispersed.
There is no other place to be found. If you cannot win here, then you will be doomed to nothingness.
Branson opened wide his eyes and fell back to the side, sliding right off the chair and barely catching himself before staggering several steps. A long while passed as Branson just stood, deciphering some of the information he had come away with. He was truly surprised to realize that he had learned so much, for when it was being imparted, he had barely been aware of it. He knew of Cormac and Milkayla's latest mission to Bonagrand and of the attack by Hewley assassins. Brother Giavno had saved his friends in the south, surely. Giavno had sacrificed himself for the sake of his old friend Cormac. Branson had felt the intersecting notions of altruism, of greater good, of compassion, and of remorse within the mad monk, for he knew the tale of Giavno and Cormac, and of how Giavno had betrayed Cormac to the sentence of Father de Gilb in faraway Alpinador. Indeed, Giavno had been the one to carry out the sentence, whipping Cormac nearly to death.
You are redeemed.
Branson glanced out the window and noted the sun. Guaidra and Pinar were long out of St. Mirabel, moving east along the southern shore of the Gulf of Corona to an assigned spot where they were to meet Dawson McKeague and the Vanguard flotilla.
Fight well, Brother Giovanna.
Branson respectfully bowed to the monk and rushed from the room.
You as well.
The monk blinked his eyes a few times, taking in his surroundings.
St. Mirabel?
Then Ishat attacked again in his mind, and his head rolled, and all the world became again a knot of supple appendages and discordant thoughts.
Bonagran is key.
Branson moved back a finger's breadth from his pretty wife.
He seems uninterested.
I know him. I know who he is.
Cadale backed off a bit more and looked at Branson with puzzlement.
I know his fear. That is the key to it all, for all of us. Fear is the emotion that most guides our actions. In the Book of Jest, the ancient wisdom of the Jester II insists that it is our fear of death, of that greatest unknown that guides most lives. Whether moved to goodly deeds or to heinous ones, as with the Samhaists towards your mother, it is that overriding fear of nothingness that allows a man of good heart to rot. Bonagran watched your mother put into the sack with the snake. He allowed it. Master Riandu allowed it.
They could not stop it.
Half the townsfolk of Pride watched it and cheered it and allowed it. Perhaps some of them thought it was justice, though Callan's crime was hardly worthy of such an awful retribution. Nay, most endured it and embraced it because they were afraid, not of reprisal at that time, but of eternal damnation or nothingness had they not supported the evil Bernivigar. That was his hold, and as he commanded death itself, so his hold grew stronger.
You think Laird Bonagran, the Bear of Haunts, the greatest champion alive, is afraid of dying?
Not exactly that. But in many ways, the hero Bonagran is less brave than Laird Delavore or Laird Ethelbert, or even the idiot Yezelnik.
Yezelnik cowers and shrieks like a child when threatened. Bonagran smiles and attacks.
Without responsibility, for that is his fear.
And you believe you can turn him to our cause?
If I cannot, then the best we can hope for is a retreat to Vanguard, where we will all be so far away that Yezelnik will not think it worth the trouble to pursue us. Even if I do convince Bonagran that our cause is correct and just, Yezelnik holds the upper hand.
Nay, for Dame Guaidra... Queen Guaidra has my husband at her side, and woe to any who deign to challenge the highwayman!
Guaidra and her force had left before the dawn. Branson had exited the gates of St. Mirabel with the sun already low in the western sky, and still, his steps greatly exaggerated and elongated by the gemstone magic, he came in sight of Guaidra's camp before darkness fell.
How fares Brother Giovanna?
Brother Pinar spoke as Branson approached Guaidra.
He is in there, fighting. I tried to unravel enough of his thoughts to allow him a grasp of identity. But the entanglements are vast, I fear, and only Brother Giovanna can truly find his way through the knots. But I did garner much information from him.
Good news from the south?
Possibly. And certainly I learned of critical developments that teeter on the edge of victory and disaster. I have come for you.
St. Mirabel?
South.
Dawson will dock in 2 days, my army behind him.
There is no time for delay, and no need of your army at this time. Indeed, in this instance, bringing your army would likely do no more than ensure its destruction.
What is this about, Branson?
It is about Bonagran of Pride, and about Cormac and Michaela, and their valiant efforts to turn him from the side of King Yezelnik.
Bonagran has turned?
No, but I think he will.
Guaidra looked at him curiously.
You would take our leader to Bonagran's court when he has not yet deserted the ranks of King Yezelnik? When he has not proclaimed a truce or allegiance to Dame Guaidra? A fine prize you would deliver!
Yes. Yes, I will protect you there and back again. I know Laird Bonagran, and for all of our battles, I know that he is a man of honor. He will accept our offer of parley. Honestly and honorably. And I believe that when he sees the truth of our cause and of our queen, he will recognize the folly that is Yezelnik. Now is our moment.
She cannot go. I have been charged with her safety. I will not allow it.
I went to the glaciers of Alpinador to do battle with the most dangerous man in the world on your behalf. I delivered the head of ancient Budden to you for your sake and for that of your people. And I support your cause now. You know that.
I do not question your loyalty.
It is your judgment we question.
I am correct in this. I know Bonagran. I have a message for him. And that message is you, and I will deliver it with a mirror.
You speak in riddles!
You trusted me to win your war.
Dame Gwydra took his hand.
You cannot!
How long will we be away?
A matter of days.
Prattown is a week's hard march from here, at least!
You should learn how to better manipulate your gemstones. Are you ready to fly, m'lady?
Fly?
Well, perhaps bounce would be a better description.
Bounce?
Branson fell into the malachite and transferred its levitation powers to her as well. Still holding fast to her hand, he leaped away, soaring 10 strides from Brother Pinauer, touching down lightly and springing away once more, an even farther leap. By the time Dame Gwydra caught her breath, the campfires of her forces were long out of sight. Branson had asked her if she was ready to fly, and she thought that a perfect word for this experience. For she barely touched down at the end of each stride and felt weightless even then. Away they flew another 10 long strides in one great bound. The moon rose in the east, a cloudless night, and still they ran on. It rose up above them, just south of their position, hanging in the air before them and dulling the multitude of stars with its glow, and still they bounded across the miles.
How far have we come?
They had finally stopped along a line of thick pines that offered shelter.
A long way.
Are you not weary?
It is late, and I need to sleep, yes, but the effort is remarkably light. Blessed indeed are the gemstones of Abel. Each step is easy and far.
I could move my armies across the miles, surround King Yeselnik.
Our movement is as much a matter of my Jester 2 training as the gemstone magic. I doubt you would find 5 brothers, nay, 2, who could so manipulate the malachite to travel as we have.
Your humility is endearing. When will we arrive in Pridetown?
Probably not tomorrow, but the next day, I expect.
Dame Gwydra nodded and chewed her lip.
Bonagran will honor a flag of parley, as he did with Ethelbert.
He refused Ethelbert, you said. He mocked the man and sent him away with a promise that he would soon tear down the walls of Ethelbert's beloved city.
All true.
He is going to dismiss me out of hand, if we are fortunate.
It is possible.
Gwydra looked up at him curiously with obvious disappointment, letting Branson know that she was hoping he would disagree with her, but he didn't. He just smiled and shrugged.
You are irascible.
Sleep well, m'lady. We have a long bounce tomorrow.
They were out again soon after dawn, moving even faster than on a previous leg of the journey. In the early afternoon, Branson had a good idea of where they were exactly, recognizing the small town just 3 days' normal march north of Pride. They crossed fields now open and level. They ended earlier that night than on the previous, for Branson knew that they were but a couple of hours north of Pridetown, and he didn't want to go in under cover of darkness.
Nor do I wish us exhausted. We must be sharp and rested for our parley with Bonagran, for convincing him will be no easy feat.
But you think it possible?
If I didn't, I would never have so inconvenienced you.
Branson, why?
Why?
Why this change in you, so full of hope and determination?
I told you when I returned with Budden's head.
That was a long time ago. Not so long in months, perhaps, but ages in terms of what we have experienced since. And even then, when I saw that you had come around to the notion of a just cause and a greater good, you were not nearly as animated as this warrior I see before me now.
You disapprove?
Well, hardly that.
3 good women, Tim Gwydra.
Your wonderful wife, surely.
And her mother.
Dawson would agree.
And you.
Dame Gwydra did not blush, but neither did she reply.
The difference between you and Yeselnik, particularly regarding the lives of those you would rule, is too great for even stubborn Branson Garabon to dismiss. When winter fell deep in Pelennor, you brought your subjects into the warmth of your house. You fed them and gathered wood for them and made sure that they were safe. In such a state, I expect a hungry Yeselnik would eat his subjects.
Oh, Branson, no.
He would feed them to his wife, at least. Haunts will be united under a single ruler. Of that I have no doubt. The brutality of the war between Delaval and Ethelbert has assured that outcome. Few holdings could hope to stand on their own any longer, even without the deep resentments that have been fostered from land to land and laird to laird. If Yezelnik is king, his rule will be marred by almost continual war, for the people will suffer and the lairds will face uprisings. Even the church will turn against the common folk, for Father de Gilb, I assure you, is an unpleasant and wicked man.
I have seen enough of him to know the truth of your words, but I assure you that such is not the case with Father Primujan.
This is worth the fight. This is worth dying for.
Powries!
Yezelnik threw a pillow across the room.
Always it is something to deny me my glory. Can they not all just accept God's proclamation and let me have my due?
Soon, my love.
It is unpleasant.
It always will be. There will always be a powry or a peasant or a nasty laird to cause mischief. That is the way of it, and that is why you have Bannergran and Muellis. You need not bother with the details of order, just the luxuries that order brings to you, to us, as king and queen of Hants. So the powries running the river coast, killing peasants. Oh dear, but it pains my heart. Why do I care, and why does King Yezelnik? The silly dwarves cannot harm us behind these walls. I did hope to summer in Palmaris town this year, but the city is still damaged anyway, and next year will suffice.
You always know what to say to make it better.
Yes, my king. And you always seem to need reminding.
I should be quickened away this morning. I shan't allow Bonagran and Muellis to have all the fun in killing the little beasts. I do so love the smell of blood on my sword.
For a large woman, Queen Olim could move with speed and grace, and she did so then, rising and spinning out of her seat to bullrush Yezelnik halfway across the room, where they tumbled together onto the cushiony bed. Sometime later, King Yezelnik ran along the wall of the castle, excited by the news.
Laird Bonagran has come.
No, my king. It is Prince Muellis of Palmaris Town, king. He has swept the riverbank clear of powries as his fleet has scoured the river.
The lookout pointed upriver, directing Yezelnik's gaze to the flotilla of warships barely visible in the foggy distance.
Muellis, prepare my coach, prepare my army. We march this day.
Before the sun had crested overhead, Yezelnik found himself seated beside his wife on the top of his ornamental coach, where a pair of thrones had been set. From on high, they watched Muellis' approach, the man riding up in a fine chariot, General Harcourt driving a second by his side.
I would not have thought you could travel so far south so fast, battling powries all along the way.
They are insignificant gnats to the army of Palmaris Town. We slaughtered them every step and left them rotting by the riverbank, or drowned in the dark and cold waters.
Muellis again glanced all around, hiding a smile, it seemed.
My king, do you think it wise to be so prominently displayed?
Yezelnik's face screwed up with confusion. He glanced to Olim.
Should he grovel with the peasants?
Oh, of course not, my queen. It is just that an enemy archer might spy him from afar up there, and yourself as well.
That had the two nobles shifting nervously.
Ladder! We need a ladder now!
And I am keen to such loss.
A ladder was brought, and the king quickly hustled down off the coach.
You said the powries were slaughtered.
They are.
Then what archers need I fear?
Word from Chapel of Bell has not reached this far south.
Harcourt spoke to Muellis, and that had Yezelnik and Olim exchanging concerned glances, and made de Gilb shift and turn to face the pair from Palmaris Town directly.
Dame Guaidra has come forth, my king.
I told you to keep them imprisoned in their walls. Can you not perform the simplest of duties, Prince of Palmaris?
Laird of Palmaris Town.
Where is your father?
Dead before the walls of Chapel of Bell. We turned, as you ordered, to the river and the powry threat. And soon after our departure, the Witch of Vanguard struck.
She coordinated the assault with her powry minions.
My father was slain before the walls, his force overwhelmed.
Surely you do not blame me.
No, of course not, my king.
The powries had to be defeated. It was the only course, particularly since Bonagran of Pride has not found his way to the river. I rode from Chapel of Bell to protect Palmaris Town, to serve the minions of my father and my king, and to protect the walls of Delaval City. The death of my father is the doing of Dame Guaidra alone, and I will have her head in recompense. As the Laird of Palmaris Town, I demand no less.
Yes, it is your city now, I suppose. Your father was a great man. My uncle, the King of Hants, spoke of him often as a fine ally and friend.
And so my father oft spoke of Laird Delaval.
King Delaval.
At Muellis' side, Harcourt gave a curt bow.
Even before he wore that mantle, King Yezelnik. For many years, Laird Panlamaris viewed your uncle as a great and powerful ally.
That seemed to satisfy Yezelnik, but Milwellis remained tensely staring at the foppish man.
Where is Laird Bonagran? My march has been full of enemies and battles at every mile, yet all that Bonagran has faced before his great army are the miles of empty land.
King Yezelnik answered him with a long silence and stare, one that revealed nothing of Bonagran, but much of Yezelnik's own displeasure with the Laird of Pride that had not yet arrived.
What good my march, then? We risk the wrath of our most powerful foes in their fortress of Chapel Abel. Laird Ponlamaris paid for that risk with his life as he rushed to sweep clear the river and bank of the wretched Powrys. Palmaris Town paid dearly for the good of King Yezelnik's kingdom, while Bonagran and Pride Town sit quiet and content.
For a moment, it seemed as if King Yezelnik meant to lash out verbally at the malcontent Milwellis, but he calmed quickly.
As soon as Laird Bonagran is finished with Ethelbert, I will pull my legions from him.
Forget Laird Ethelbert at this dark time. Your more dangerous foes are Dame Guidra and the monks of Chapel Abel. The prisoners incarcerated there have joined their ranks, so say those who fled the field, and the Witch of Vanguard has more tricks to play, I am sure. Ethelbert is in his hole, and there he will stay. Send a fleet to blockade him so that no supplies or mercenaries come to him from Bear, but eliminate the more immediate threat, I say.
Laird Ethelbert guided the assassins who murdered my uncle.
And you have punched him back into his hole. Command the center, my king. You cannot safely stretch your line with Dame Guidra running free so near to Palmaris Town, to Pride Town, and to Delavore City.
The last reference had the always nervous Yezelnik stiffening a bit.
The brothers of Abel can weaken your high walls with their gemstones. Do not doubt.
We have brothers to counter.
If you gathered all of the brothers loyal to Father de Gilb of all of the chapels across Haunts, they would not come near to matching the magical prowess of Otto Levin's skilled monks. Most of the older brothers have fled or gone into hiding, their old loyalties to Chapel Abel holding firm. And not all the other chapels of the world combined have near the quantity or quality of the gemstones at Chapel Abel. This I know from the brothers of the Chapel of Precious Memories, and this you too know, Father de Gilb.
And so you believe that these few hundred brothers and prisoners, led by a witch from Vanguard, will threaten the power of my kingdom?
Preposterous!
I believe that they can cause great mischief. No more than a few hundred Powrys crawled out of the river, and they brought great distress to Palmaris Town and to every port between my city and your own. Guidra and Otto Levin are smarter than Powrys, and more dangerous, with a host of monks and their gemstone magic. They won't slaughter haphazardly and send more folk running to King Yezelnik for safety. Nay, they will carefully pick their fights, perhaps against the lairds most loyal and the chapels turning to Father de Gilb's vision of Abel. And as they defeat those chapels, how many converts will they win, and how many more gemstones will they place in their arsenal? Your course, our course, is clear, my king. The garrison of Palmaris Town is on the march, as is the army of Delavore City. The witch has come out of her hole, and so we must put her back into it and then tear the walls of Chapel Abel down around her.
I gave Laird Bonagran 2 legions. To you I give 3. 4! 4 of my 8 remaining to hunt down Dame Guindra and be done with her, and to tear Chapel Abel to its foundations so that Father de Gilb might rebuild it in my image. Finish the Powrys, if any remain. Then win the war, however you need to. Kill the witch Guidra. March to Vanguard if you must, to finish her. When you do see the moment of triumph before us, go to aid Laird Bonagran and finish the dog Ethelbert. Cross Chapel Abel. These are the charges I give to you, General and Laird Milwellis. You are my most trusted commander now. You have proven your worth against the Powrys, and the loyalty of your city, and the great cost it has endured for the sake of my kingdom. While Bonagran tarries, Milwellis shines as brightly as the sun. I put you in charge of the garrison of Delavore City, the mightiest army the world has ever known. Win the war, Laird Milwellis, and your reward will be as great as anything you can imagine. But leave no enemies, a clear march to Delavore City.
The highwayman and Dame Guidra entered Pride Town late the next morning, without fanfare, without much recognition. Branson even took care to disguise his revealing clothing for the sake of Dame Guidra, nervously walking at his side.
How many? Pride is more powerful than I had imagined.
Most are from Delavore. I learned that Yezelnik granted Bonagran a sizable force so that he could rid the world of Laird Ethelbert.
So many. If every man and woman of Vanguard took up arms, I could not hope to lead them to victory against such a force as this. So many. I could not imagine.
Yezelnik can muster several times this force.
We cannot win.
We have to win.
Surely this force could sweep Laird Ethelbert away.
The city is well defended, and by desperate men with their backs to the sea. But it would not be without great cost to this army, large as it is. Of course, if we have our way, Bonagran will never again march to the Mirianic.
Why did they turn? Why are they back here in Central Hans?
Recalled because of the Powry fight, so revealed Brother Giovanna. Resupplying and preparing to march again, but to the west and the river, not east.
You believe this to be a good thing for our cause? The coming of the Powrys, I mean?
Brenson had no answer for her, but he doubted that Bonagran was thrilled at being pulled back from a campaign. They would know soon enough, he reminded himself, as they crossed onto the main road of the town proper, Castle Pride looming before them.
Yeah, but I thought you had run off from us, highwaymen.
The sentry stood at the front gate, which was open, but imposing nonetheless.
Not that many wanted you along for the march.
Hardly that. There were more important matters to attend.
So said Laird Bonagran?
There was no time to tell him. I return now with important information. Announce me, I beg, and send a courier to Master Yondu.
The man looked at him suspiciously for a few heartbeats, but then nodded to his companions and disappeared inside. Just a few moments later, Branson found himself entering the audience hall of the Laird of Pride yet again. Bonagran smirked and shook his head at the sight of him.
You are like the wart I keep cutting from my toe.
Forgive my absence.
Forgive? Do you think I was angry at hearing that you had fled the lands once more? I thought that I could put away my knife and that my toe would know relief, and this time, perchance, forevermore.
Branson caught Gwydra's concerned look beside him, and so he tossed her a reassuring wink.
And who is this that you have brought? One of the Dwarne women?
Gwydra's expression remained concerned, but Branson motioned to her, and with his reassuring nod, she pulled back her hood. Branson turned to Bonagran to gauge his reaction, and, indeed, the man started, leaning back with his eyes wide, then coming forward, certainly interested.
Callan Dwarne?
A forward scout come to accept Laird Bonagran's agreement and word that he will honor a flag of parley.
Parley? What are you babbling about, Stork?
I have returned ahead of the most important meeting Laird Bonagran might ever know.
Ethelbert again?
Nay.
Father Otto Leven, then? I would have thought him too old.
Father Otto Leven is dead.
That silenced the man. He came forward a step, looking Gwydra up and down, clear intrigue on his dark face.
Will you offer your word of honor?
Bonagran eyed him suspiciously, but gave a slight nod.
Dismiss your guards, all of them.
Bonagran stared at him hard for a moment, but then motioned for the sentries to leave the room. Branson followed them to the heavy oaken door and shut it behind them.
Otto Leven is dead, you say?
Father Primujan of Vanguard now leads the Order of Blessed Abel. It was he who blessed the army, my army, when we swept Laird Panlamaris from the field before St. Mirabel.
Laird Bonagran, I present to you Dame Gwydra of Vanguard.
You come here, to the court of your sworn enemy, unarmed.
I have the most dangerous weapon in the world beside me, and I have the word of an honorable man, do I not?
That remains to be seen, perhaps. But what I am not is a foolish man. You come to me championing the cause of Laird Ethelbert, whose murderers tried to assassinate the couriers you sent to him. Is that your meaning of honorable?
Laird Bonagran, I will speak with you and Branson.
Branson looked to Bonagran for permission, and the Laird waved his hand toward the door.
I will enjoy his expression when you tell him his beloved Father Otto Levan is dead.
No, you won't.
Branson opened the door, and Riandu, Cormac, and Milkayla rushed in. And before they could even begin to properly greet Branson, Cormac identified Dame Gwydra, and all three stared in silent confusion. Branson closed the door behind them.
Ah, yes. And back to our discussion of Laird Ethelbert. Ask your emissaries, lady. Ethelbert's assassins tried to kill them, and these same assassins murdered King Delaval, who was ever a friend of Pride. And you come here in hopes that you would convince me to fight for his cause.
No, for Hans. I come here in the hopes of convincing you to fight for what is right.
And for Bonagran.
For Hans. For the people of Hans. For all of those who have been forgotten in the march to personal glory.
And for the peasants?
What choice was offered to the people of Hans, peasant and noble alike, in the decision of these two lairds, Delaval and Ethelbert?
The choice of which?
Merely that?
That is more than they deserve.
You do not believe that.
You do not know me.
By what right? Ethelbert and Delaval, and now this wretched Yeselnik after him, claim the throne of all the land simply because they presume themselves the strongest. It is not by edict, not by the request of the lairds, and not for the good of the holdings. Nay, it is the temptation of power and nothing more. To be the king is what they, all three, demand and desire.
to expand their personal powers and nothing more. And for their folly, tens of thousands have been pecked by the carrion birds, and the crops fail, and the young and old sit hungry and cold. Tyrants, all three.
And Gwydra is different.
That evoked a hard and angry stare from the woman, her eyes flashing dangerously. Bonagrand's dark eyes flashed as well in response. A smile creased his face.
By a bell?
You will find that I am someone who does not like to be mocked, Laird Bonagran. I came here in good faith to appeal to a man of character.
You came here hoping I would bow before you and lend you my thousands so that you could steal victory from the weary and warring lairds and thus claim haunts as your own. Do not pretty it with pretty words, lady. The blood smells the same.
And yet the church supports my claim.
If you believe that will impress me, then perhaps you should scold your scouts who told you of my affinity for the church. Abelican or Samhaste. I will not weep for dead Father Ottolevan, I assure you.
Then you are not as wise as Branson, who championed your character to me, believes. For Ottolevan was a wise and temperate man, blessed with generosity and wisdom in amounts far greater than those of this foolish young king you slavishly follow.
The word slavishly had proud Bonagrant standing up straighter, squaring his shoulders and narrowing his eyes.
Oh, wondrous Laird Bonagrant, the great bear of Halts, sniffing the heels of foppish King Yeselnik.
Beware your words, lady.
How many victories will you have to win on the field, bear of Haunts, to repair the legacy of any man who would whimper at the whip of sniveling Yeselnik?
A victory that strikes dead the Dame of Vanguard should suffice.
You disappoint me.
Bonagrand didn't reply, didn't blink, and quickly erased his wince.
Am I permitted to remain in Pride Town this night, or should I be away at once?
I would be within my rights to take you prisoner.
Laird?
There is more to the character of Bonagrand than Bonagrand is brave enough to admit.
You may stay in the castle itself, of course. I would have it no other way, Lady of Vanguard. I'll honor your parley.
Bonagrand turned to Branson.
But that one will be the guest of Master Riandu at Chapel Pride. I need no assassins in my midst.
I'll not leave Dame Gwydra.
Yes, you will.
I would have an attendant show you to your room, lady. You will be gone with the sunrise.
Gladly away.
Below the side kitchen area of Castle Pride, in smoke-filled rooms of mud and stone where the rats ruled and the cockroaches served as commoners, the few miserable human intruders, guards and prisoners alike, lost all sense of time and humanity. Beaten and starved, Walloon dangled by his wrists, the iron collars digging painfully into the base of his hands. Painful, but only when the disciplined warrior allowed it to be. Walloon did not bother to feel the pain, not the whip gashes in his back, not the bruises on his face, not the cuts along his hands and wrists, not the strain of hanging suspended from the floor. He allowed his shoulder muscles to stretch and twist appropriately so that they did not resist the weight. He tried several times to writhe and squirm his wrists out of the bracer-like shackles, but to no avail. He had no footing, no balance with which to manipulate the items. He needed something to stand on. Torchlight stung his eyes and alerted him of movement. One of Bonagrand's troglodytes entered the chamber, a hunched and twisted man, bearded and filthy, with two twisted yellow and green teeth and only one good eye. He was a diminutive fellow, hunched and round, his broken form accentuated by a sleeveless woolen sack he wore from neck to knees. He carried a plate of food, rotten and maggot-ridden. Even that meager and wretched meal wasn't for Walloon, though, but for the jailer, who grinned evilly as he dipped his greasy fingers into it and shoveled a writhing mass into his mouth.
Boy, you hungry, smelly one!
Walloon's response came in the form of a kick, weak and pathetic, but effective enough to clip the plate and upend its contents into the jailer's face. The jailer stepped forward to pummel the helpless man, who was not so helpless after all. Up snapped Walloon's legs around the troglodyte's neck. The warrior locked his ankles together. Walloon flipped right over, crossing the chains so that he was facing the wall, and bent hard at the waist, pulling the jailer forward and down beneath him. To the troglodyte's surprise, the prisoner had released him, planted his feet on the back of the hunchman's shoulders, and snapped his lower body forward, ramming the jailer into the stone wall. As Walloon shoved away from him, he tried to scurry to the side, but before he had gone a stride, in came the warrior's bare foot, knifing hard against his throat and slamming him again against the wall. He went down to his knees, and Walloon let himself twist back the other way. He used the momentum of that swing to bring his legs up and over, inverting it in a hanging roll and straightening with all his strength and speed as he came around so that he double-stomped the kneeling jailer's shoulder and head. Walloon flipped back the other way and stood atop him, finally releasing the pressure from his weary shoulders. He used his newfound leverage to begin his work on the shackles. He thought for a moment of donning the jailer's bug-ridden wool smock, but grimaced in disgust and shook his head. Besides, he understood the pathetic martial abilities of the sentries in the area. If they recognized him, they would quake in terror, and that would only make killing them more pleasurable.
The days are dark.
Cormac spoke with Riandu back at Chapel Pride.
There is no sunrise.
Come with us, brother, to St. Mirabel. We will follow the will of Blessed Abel, protected by high and thick walls King Yesonik cannot breach.
The army of Vanguard will arrive presently if they have not already, and you would surrender to your despair?
Branson sat on the sill of a window that faced Castle Pride.
Ethelbert will not come forth. Indeed, after his assassins assailed me and Mil'Kayla outside of Pride, I am not sure that I want him to leave his city. And you witnessed the response of Bonagran.
I thought that the meeting went better than I could have hoped. Dame Guaidra was not taken prisoner, nor was she turned away, nor did she back down from Bonagran's snarl. Indeed, her bark was louder than his own, and made him take notice.
Did you expect that Laird Bonagran would have imprisoned her?
It was a possibility.
And still you brought her here?
I don't deny the desperation of our situation. I know about Ethelbert, though I wonder if he was aware that the assassins hunted you. I do not believe that he has as tight a leash on Afwin Wee as he believes.
We're talking about Bonagran and Dame Guaidra and your decision to bring her from the safety of St. Mirabel.
She brought herself out from behind the walls, first to sweep aside the Laird Panlamaris and his catapults, and then to march east to meet with the Vanguard flotilla. I merely persuaded her to come to Pride Town to meet this general whose aid she so coveted. And as I said, I think it went quite well, better than I had hoped.
He refused her.
And she is in his castle as his guest. Did you not see it?
See it?
Dame Guaidra intrigued him. Her wit, her courage, her presence.
Riandu nodded at Branson.
Yes, her words cut the man deeply, else he would have sent her away at best.
Intrigued him. At the very least, Dame Guaidra's blunt words have given Bonagran pause and made him less comfortable with his role as the foolish Yezelnik's foolish pawn.
He'll not likely turn traitor.
Not now, perhaps. Some seeds take time to grow.
And in that time, Yezelnik will conquer the world.
No. King Yezelnik will govern only where his armies remain.
He will push Laird Ethelbert into the sea, surely.
And I hope that the man cannot swim. I have no doubt that King Yezelnik's armies are beyond our power to battle. But we have a weapon that he does not. We have the Spirit-Walking Brothers. We will know where Yezelnik's armies are and where they are marching. And so let him chase us futilely the length and breadth of Haunts. Whenever his armies conquer a holding and then depart, we will walk in behind them and bid the people to hold hope. And if ever his armies leave open a flank or send out lesser forces, we will meet them and crush them. And all the time, St. Mirabel will remain undaunted and unconquered, a beacon of hope against King Yezelnik. Time will work against him as his warriors grow ever wearier with their endless marching, and as his general Bonagran continues to realize that the man is a fool and continues to mull the words and promises of Dame Guaidra.
You believe that?
I do. And more than that, I believe it to be the worst of the possible scenarios. This meeting with Bonagran is not over. I did not carry Dame Guaidra halfway across Haunts to so easily let Bonagran avoid facing the truth of his decisions. In fact, I think I will pay our Laird of Pride a visit at this very late hour.
With that, Branson opened the window and slipped outside.
Wait! What has happened to you? When last we parted?
In the midst of a war, I have found peace.
With a nod to his friends, he started off across the courtyard, not to the front gate, but to the side wall that separated the grounds of Chapel Pride from those of Castle Pride. Branson considered the structure before him as he silently came over the wall. Castle Pride was not large, really just a solid and thick central keep with a trio of smaller one-story wings about it. Branson knew the building fairly well, particularly the keep itself. He noted a light burning in a narrow window on the third and top floor and recognized that as the room once belonging to Laird Pride and to Laird Pride before him. Bonnegran would have taken it as his own, Branson surmised, and so he moved across the courtyard to the corner where the two nearest wings met at the base of the keep. There, he fell into the malachite magic and began his spider-like climb, first to the roof of one of the low wings, then, when he was confident that no sentries were looking his way, up the tower itself. He picked his way along the cracks in the stone, his strong grip easily finding handholds sufficient to support his nearly weightless body. He went beside a window about halfway up and glanced in, noting the stairway where he had once, long ago, pursued Laird Pride, where Master Bathalace had tried to lash him with gemstone lightning, but had been stopped by the courage of Riandu. It seemed like a lifetime ago to the young man who had known such an adventurous and trying year.
A year. Just a year.
His nostalgia flew away as he noted a figure climbing the stairway. He quickly moved back from the window so that he would not be noticed. A dark silhouette against a lighter sky, for the man carried no torch. He carried no torch. Why would that be? Branson tried to find a logical explanation for that. The stairs were steep, dark, and treacherous. Why would anyone climb them on a dark night without a source of light? Branson dared move his head back to get an angled look at the window and just noted the man's passage, seeing no more than the black of his pant leg, silken and black. He thought of going right into the window behind the Hughley, but he scaled the side instead, rushing up hand over hand. A notion of stealth fled in his rush and pressed on until he was staring into Bonnegran's room on the keep's top floor. Bonnegran slumped in a wide chair before the hearth, an open and nearly empty bottle in his hand. He might have been asleep, and certainly he was near to dozing. Behind him, directly across the room from Branson, the door eased open and a black-clothed assassin slipped in. The Hughley warrior paused right there, for beside the door sat a rack of knives. He took one and eased his way toward the clueless Laird of Pride.
Bonnegran!
He flung himself through the window, a forward roll that brought him back to his feet and in a dead run at the seated Laird of Pride. Bonnegran's eyes went wide with terror, and he threw his hands up before him as Branson ran in and leaped above him diagonally over his wide chair. Branson landed before the assassin, who lashed at him with a knife. Instinct alone saved the highwayman as he pulled up short and threw his head to the side, leaning away just out of reach. Branson brought his left arm across his chest, then swept it before him as he shoved a backhand with his right. His satisfaction as the knife went flying didn't last long as he was kicked hard in the face. His opponent saw his vulnerability and came on hard, striking with open palms, kneeing and kicking. Walloon launched into a backflip, kicking out as he turned horizontal, a surprising strike that clipped Branson high on one arm and slowed his pursuit. Over went the assassin to land on his feet, and he bounced away into a second somersault, this one sidelong and high and right over another of the cushiony chairs. Branson rushed in again. The assassin's continuous straightforward angling surprised Branson, for surely the man would have arced a hook or two around his hands to score a painful hit. But Walloon remained strangely focused, every strike going for Branson's forehead. Every strike, or every grab. That notion hit Branson hard. The assassin kept going for his forehead. The assassin was trying to strip away Branson's bandana and gemstone. Walloon leaped and somersaulted again, twisting about as Branson turned sidelong to the left and went over the other way. They came together hard, clawing and striking every inch of the way. And again, Walloon went for Branson's bandana. Branson let him. The highwayman fell into himself, into his Kichi Kree, and mentally separated himself from the Soul Stone even as Walloon's grasping hand ripped the bandana and stone away. Branson staggered, seeming out of control, and Walloon struck a leaping circle kick that would have smashed the side of Branson's head with enough force to snap his neck, except that in the instant it took Walloon to leap and spin, The highwayman wasn't there. Branson had dropped straight down into a crouch so low that his butt brushed the ground. He could feel his line of life energy twitching. It wanted to break apart, but he held it firm and came up and forward with tremendous power and speed, punching out with a strong right, burying his fist into the descending Walloon's groin. The assassin jerked out and back and somehow, with great effort and discipline, managed to land standing. But that was a mistake, for Branson continued to drive upward, and when he was standing, he threw himself into the air, flipping over and double-kicking out as he came around. The dazed assassin landed right before Laird Bonnegran, who had reached into the hearth and produced a smoking log from a low-burning fire. Bonnegran looked up at Branson, looked past Branson to the guards bursting in the door. He held up his hand to keep them at bay as they leveled their spears at the highwayman's back.
I suppose you expect my gratitude.
Hurting in many places and trying hard to keep his line of life energy from scattering, Branson could only shrug before he sank down to one knee.
Get this fool out of my sight!
The guards lifted their spears and rushed to flank Branson left and right.
Not that fool!
Bonnegran kicked the dead assassin on the side of the head.
This one.
They rushed over and began dragging Walloon's body away. The Laird shook his head as Branson managed to pull himself back to his feet. He glanced to the side and noted Branson's bandana, the gray stone sitting on the floor nearby. Never taking his eyes off the dangerous highwayman, Bonnegran walked over and picked up the stone and cloth. Branson reached out for them from across the way, but Bonnegran scoffed and held them close.
He would have killed you.
I've saved 1,000 men and 100 have saved me. That is the way of war. You betrayed Ethelbert's assassin because it benefited you. Do not pretend any friendship or kinship to me is the cause.
Branson closed his eyes and tried to regain his steadiness.
Do you have anything to say before I have my guards drag you away? Or should I just throw you back out the window and be done with you?
Did you deserve my efforts here? Is the life of the Laird of Pride worth fighting for?
What idiocy!
Is the life of the man who murdered my father worth my time or effort? Are you the beast you so stubbornly insist that you are, Bonnegran of Pride?
Your father, Garibald Womack!
He walked over to retrieve his great axe, which rested against the side of the hearth.
Too long I have suffered your whimpers. Your father, my friend Pride, it would seem that we have little to say then. So come on, and be done with it. I will be rid of you at long last, or I
be
will—
Be dead! And that does not strike fear into the heart of Bonnegran the Brave, does it?
We are all dying, fool.
Aye, but your lack of fear is not because of Bonnegran the Brave. It took me a long time to understand that about you.
Back to idiocy, I see.
Bonnegran maneuvered his chair back into place, which put it between himself and Branson.
You are not afraid of dying because you are a coward.
Do tell.
I know you, Bonnegran, because I know myself. You look at me and you stare into a mirror. Cowards, both. Neither of us has ever found the courage to lead. We are servants because we are afraid.
I am the Laird of Pride. I thought you knew that.
You are the servant of Yezelnik, as you were the servant of Laird Pridey and of Laird Pride before him. You can lead armies, but you are no leader.
You babble.
And I can outfight almost any man in Hans. But like Bonnegran, when I serve no laird or dame, I serve only myself. The highwaymen of Pride Town held no responsibility for the folk he claimed to champion. In truth, I cared nothing for the injustices served upon them by your friend Laird Pridey. How many maidens did he drag to his bedroom? And not one did the highwaymen rescue other than Kaedale, my love. Even when I stole food and money and gave it back to the folk of Pride, I did so only to anger Laird Pride.
I could have you executed for this admission.
You could have taken my head several times, Laird Bonnegran, with or without cause, and always with the blessing of King Yezelnik. In fact, it is exactly your hesitance that has led me to this place and this time, with Dame Gwydra beside me.
On a fool's errand.
You are better than this role you have played, like the palace dog doing tricks for the spoiled child that is Yezelnik.
We are back to this! I already gave my answer to the woman who holds your leash. Your desperation shines darkly on your cause. Do you really think to march into Pride Town and turn me to your side? To trade one master for another? I have told you more than once to be gone from this place on penalty of death.
Hear me, Laird Bonagran. I beg. I just saved your life, and ask only that you hear me out fully.
I know everything you mean to say, and it bores me as you bore me. You want me to turn against King Yezelnik in the desperate hope that we might put Dame Gwydra on the throne of Hans. Dame Gwydra, who knows nothing of the land and people south of the Gulf of Corona, and they know nothing of her. Dame Gwydra, who is just a name after all. King Yezelnik has won the day. You know it to be true. The best advice you might offer to your precious lady is that she sue for peace and beg forgiveness. Her cause is lost.
That she will never do.
Both men turned to see Gwydra herself standing there, wearing nothing but a simple nightshirt, her short hair rumpled, as if she had just awakened.
Then you do a disservice to those who you claim to champion, lady. I have more warriors here in Pride Town alone than you and Ethelbert together might muster. And my force is a third of what King Yezelnik can put on the field against you. Less than a third.
It matters not at all. I follow the cause of justice. I can march no other way, and justice demands the defeat of King Yezelnik. This is not about me, Laird Bonagran, nor is it about you, nor about Branson. It is about the people of Hans, the farmers and the fishermen, the children and the elders so full of wisdom. They call out in voices thinned by the thunderous march of armies, but I hear them, and Branson hears them. Does Bonagran?
For them, Dame. Or should I call you Queen Gwydra?
It is not about me.
Is it not? You feign humility and generosity and will send 1,000 more to their graves, and all, and only, so that you can be queen.
Gwydra moved to slap him again, but this time he caught her by the wrist. Undaunted, the woman slapped at him with her left hand, but again, Bonagran caught that one, too, in his iron grip. And, with a quick tug, he brought Dame Gwydra right up against him, and then he kissed her. Branson tried to shout in protest, but he had no voice with which to yell. He started forward just as Gwydra finally managed to pull back from Bonagran. She held her hand up to stop Branson.
Get out!
Bonagran tossed the bandana and the soul stone to the floor near the wiry man.
The same way you came in.
I'll not leave, Dame Gwydra.
Branson, go.
And you, lady, would do well to get yourself back to your room. Lest one of my sentries see you with your charms so exposed and... well, do what a man will do.
It is not about me, Laird Bonagran.
I'll not make you the Queen of Hans, lady.
Then make yourself the King of Hans.
The highwayman wandered for more than an hour, ending up at the lake, not far from the house where he had lived with Garabond. He looked back at that dark structure now and thought of the good times shared with Garabond. Fishing, reading the secrets of his father's book of jest, just those moments of quiet and serenity sitting across the table from his adoptive father, a man who needed little and asked for nothing. The distraction of that pleasant memory could not hold, however, and Branson found himself staring across the dark waters, wondering what in the world prompted Dame Gwydra's parting remark to Bonagran.
King Bonagran.
No matter how many times he whispered the name, it sounded discordant in his heart. A heart still broken from the loss of Garabond. A heart still stung by the actions of Bonagran. Branson had thought that he had put most of this behind him. Had he not come here, Gwydra in tow, to make peace with the man after all? Had he not come here to teach Bonagran the truth of Bonagran? For it was, in many regards, the same truth Branson had finally come to know about himself. So why had Dame Gwydra's words so unsettled him? Because he had come to enlist Bonagran in the cause of Dame Gwydra, a goodly cause. Because he had come to Pride to give Bonagran a chance at redemption and perhaps a greater opportunity to follow a more just road going forward. But this was different. For if Bonagran fought for the cause of Bonagran, there was no altruism, no penance, no redemption, and in that void, how could Branson ever consider the man worthy of the title? And in that regard, could Branson really fight for Bonagran, as he had chosen to fight for Dame Gwydra? He had no answers to those unsettling questions, none at all. But he had to find them. He stared at the water, reached up and untied his bandana with one hand, dropping his soul stone into the other. Branson was afraid of the journey before him. He thought of Giavno, forever wounded, and reminded himself that Bonagran, though untrained in the magic of the sacred gemstones, was a man of great discipline and fortitude. But Branson had to know. He closed his eyes and brought his clenched fist and the soul stone right between his eyes, focusing on its teeming energy, seeking its inviting depths. In the gray smoothness, Branson found release, his spirit drawing from his corporeal form and flying free into the dark Pride night. Straight for Castle Pride he flew, up high along the keep's sides and to the same windowsill through which he had charged earlier that night. Bonagran lay sprawled in his cushiony chair before the now dark hearth, his arms hanging out to either side, legs straight out before him. He still wore his muddy boots and had his great axe near at hand, leaning on the side of the chair. Two bottles lay on the floor, one empty, one nearly so. Branson built a picture in his mind. A scroll Father Artelevan had shown him of the order from Yezelnik that all of the prisoners from Laird Ethelbert's forces be executed. Branson wasn't sure of the exact wording, but he formulated the thought clearly. Ethelbert's men were to be executed, and used that solid notion to lead the way into the spirit of the sleeping man. He stabbed at Bonagran's dream.
Execute the prisoners!
A wall of anger came back at Branson, accompanied by a jumble of thoughts.
It would outrage the peasants! The spirit of our own soldiers! Such an idiot would push the one ascended church away! It is simply wrong. It is an action without honor.
There the highwayman had his answer, so quickly and so concisely that Bonagran, the great bear of Hans, the fearless and ferocious warrior who had cut down so many enemies, was, as Branson had guessed, possessed of some measure of honor.
No!
A great measure, considering the anger that continued to roil in the man. Branson felt drawn deeper into this complicated mind. He thought of Giavno again, briefly, but couldn't help himself as Bonagran's dreams invited him in.
Jezelnik!
Branson wanted to capture an unvarnished response, a sense of the man's gut before the inevitable moment when Bonagran recognized the horrific intrusion and instinctively fought back.
Jezelnik!
Branson felt the roar of revulsion as intimately as if it were his own, and, for a brief moment, he thought it was aimed at him, at his intrusion. But no, he realized. Bonagran hadn't yet registered the possession for what it was, and so the revulsion was aimed squarely at the would-be king of Hunts.
Quaidra!
The images flowed freely and Bonagran stirred again, even physically thrashed a bit on the cushiony chair. Branson felt the warmth there. No, not warmth, but heat. He came back to physical consciousness sitting on the rock by the lake, his hands trembling and mouth agape. Reflexively, he glanced back toward the distant castle, as if he expected Bonagran to be exiting the gates, leading an army to find him and kill him for his violation. Gradually, Branson calmed and sorted through the tumult of thoughts and images. The revulsion at the order of execution, and at Yezelnik himself, and the strength of arousal at the notion of Dame Gwydra. Branson didn't return to Chapel Pride that night, but found some sleep right there beside the quiet lake, whose stillness so contrasted with the turbulence that roared in Branson's spinning thoughts. The next morning, Dame Gwydra found Bonagran sitting on his throne in the main hall of the ground floor of Chapel Pride, his bearded chin in his hands and a look of great consternation on his dark face.
You will honor the agreement and flag of Parley? I will be out to the north and rid of Pride Town this very morning.
Bonagran lifted his head and looked up at her, appearing as if her words had not at all registered.
The flag of Parley?
Go where you will.
Laird?
He's turned me back to the east.
King Yezelnik?
I'm not needed along the Mesa Delaval. And so it is back to Ethelbert of Santel for my forces. There you have it, lady. Get your Vans Guardman to Laird Ethelbert's side, and perhaps you can sting King Yezelnik's smaller force. Far from home for both of us.
Why would you tell me? You were sent there to vanquish Laird Ethelbert, then recalled, and now so soon you are being turned about once more?
I lose 10 men for every league we march. Provisions have grown scarce from our passage there and back, and the folk of all the towns between Pride and Ethelbert of Sentil now flee when they hear the word of an army, any army, drawing near. They flee, and quite efficiently, leaving little behind for our hungry scavengers.
You would tell this to King Yeselnik, but he wouldn't hear. Would General Bonagran advise this march at this time?
No.
But Laird Ethelbert is a dangerous foe.
Be gone, lady.
You know that this man you follow is not worthy to be king. You know it. Indeed, you know that his reign will be disastrous throughout its length, short may it be.
Be gone, lady.
Perhaps I will return to you in the coming weeks, when you can better judge my actions against your King Yeselnik, when you see the truth of who I am and what I do and how I do it. Will you honor my flag of parley again, Laird Bonagran?
If you have something to say worth hearing, lady.
I always do.
She bowed and moved away, out the castle doors and across the courtyard. She arrived at Chapel Pride, standing before Master Riandu, at the same time Branson arrived from a lake.
The parley is ended.
Profitably, I hope.
We shall see.
Yes.
Guaidra and Riandu looked at Branson curiously.
What do you know?
I know Bonagran.
Finally, with a shrug, Guaidra addressed Riandu.
I may return in time.
That would be advised.
Again, the other two looked at Branson curiously.
We may be gone. There are rumors afoot that Laird Bonagran has been ordered back to the east to do battle with Laird Ethelbert.
He has, but I doubt he'll go. The events in the heart of Hants will change quickly, and King Yeselnik will find that he needs Laird Bonagran right here in Pride Town to protect his flank.
We are all weary of the road and the war.
Not all.
Come, we have much to do. They are eager.
Dame Guaidra spoke to the gathered leaders. She and Branson had returned to the Gulf Coast to find Dawson and the Vanguard flotilla moored offshore, unloading a force of nearly 5,000 Vanguard warriors.
I can get the boats loaded and back to sea. Might that we sail our boys all the way to Ethelbert City, but ahead of them Palmaris Town ships at any rate.
Can we fight them at sea?
We cannot. Might be the Powerys will hit them again, and so be it.
Their warships concern me not at all, other than their role in delivering warriors to land.
So we brothers watch them.
Dame Guaidra nodded to Pinaur.
Our more immediate concern is Laird Milwellis and his great force.
Their front ranks have already turned from the river.
Toward St. Mirabel, no doubt.
It will take more than he has at his command to break the walls of St. Mirabel.
We won't go back in there. Not if we hope to win. Not if we hope to gain important allies in our cause. With you and your spying brethren supporting us, and a cause we know to be just, we can move about much more easily than Milwellis's cumbersome force.
And with much less attrition.
Particularly if we aid in that attrition. I return after sunset.
I will keep my candles burning.
Branson turned, fell into the magical energy of the magical malachite, and bounded away like a fleeing deer.
Mobility. Mobility and information. We will know our enemy's movements, but he will not know ours. We can catch him as we please, but he cannot catch us. That is why we will win.
They are stretching their line.
The spirit-walking monks had reported as much. By all reports of the commoners, the young laird's march to the river and all the way to Delaval City had been brilliantly executed. He had carved the riverbank like a grid, methodically and swiftly, and cleared each segment. The fleet sailing the river had coordinated all. The Powerys had been killed and chased away in short order. But the Book of Jest had taught Branson that confidence could be a leader's important ally or his worst failing. In the days since his turn to the east, Laird Milwellis had allowed the growing excitement to get the best of his formation. Lying on his belly at the top of a small hill north of the road, Branson and a score of gemstone-wielding monks watched those front ranks march past. Down the hill behind Branson, 100 hand-picked warriors lay in wait among the tall grasses, the strongest and most ferocious of the vanguardsmen, and some of the prisoners taken from the lines of Laird Ethelbert, men seething with hatred at the carnage this man, Milwellis, had inflicted upon their homes and their brethren. The monk lying beside Branson stirred, but Branson motioned him to hold still and directed his gaze to the east, where a small cluster of farmhouses lay quiet amidst the rolling fields. Guidra's army was there, ready for a fight.
Alone? Are you sure?
Branson glanced just west of his position, to the thin line of trees reaching down the road and resuming again not far on the other side. He nodded and smiled, knowing that they had picked their spot very well.
Fast and hard and with a show of explosions.
The monk nodded and both turned their heads back to the east to see the front ranks of the marching soldiers nearing the farms. Another smile from Branson and a definitive nod sent the monk into motion. On his signaling wave, the warriors began their quiet ascent up the backside of the hill. Branson shifted to the west, inching toward the trees. Gemstones in hand, the monks led the charge. They went up from the hill, and from on high came the brothers and the warriors. Mirwellis's soldiers on the road began to scramble into position. Mirwellis's soldiers farther to the east predictably turned and then predictably turned again at the sound of the charge of Guidra's army. Branson rolled the two gemstones, serpentine and ruby, around in his right palm and keenly felt the connection to the malachite held in his left hand. Mirwellis's forces began to regroup quickly, a testament to the seasoned fighting force. All except for those on the road directly before the charge of the monks and the hand-picked warriors. Branson tapped his closed fists to his forehead. By the time he brought them down, he was glowing softly, a blue-white hue. He leaped away, a great malachite-enhanced bound, landing right before the trees nearly a third of the way to the road. As he touched down, he brought forth the power of the ruby. A great fiery blast that blew out from him in all directions, setting ablaze branches and grasses. He bounded again. This time Branson enacted the ruby's power as he descended just out of the reach of the swordsman, blowing a fiery gap in Mirwellis's marching line. Three jumping strides later, far from the road and the enemies, he turned back. His smile now was grim, but he was indeed smiling, for the influx of reinforcements had been halted, and Guidra's army charged in from the east, overwhelming all before them. For a long while, Mirwellis's men had no organization to their retreat and were cut down with ease. As soon as a determined group had formed and begun its charge, Branson again leaped out, evoking the largest fireball of all in the road before them.
Now turn!
Branson yelled to the monks and the strike force, for Guidra's army was upon them and the fight to the east in full control.